Hey, this is Fishing Frank, and we're doing radio fishing this morning. Captain Josh Greer in the seat across from me, and as usual, we've got Fishing Frank at the controls. That's why everything's all going south.
And that's why I'm so scared right now.
That's why it just trembling inside here. Josh is a charter boat captain and president of the CCA right now, and he has come to talk about CCA stuff and fishing and what's going to go on out there. So we're going to get right to it. And all right, Josh, let's see, what do we got going here? And welcome to the show again, Captain Josh.
Thanks, Frank. Oh, they love me.
It's just surprising. It's Sasquatch love.
They don't know me that well. That's why they love me.
Okay, go away, everybody. All right, stop. Okay. All right, so you were just asking me about, okay, is it okay if you do whatever? Yes, I actually own the station. Now that we're publicly broadcast, we're actually protected. So go ahead. We have First Amendment rights now.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. No, as Frank said, you know, I've kind of taken the reins with CCA here this year. And
whoa, no. Yeah. Buck them. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
So we're going to, you know, and I promised everybody that we were going to be active here in the county.
And one and two and exactly. Three and lift and squat and one and two.
And that's what I need right now. I actually need 20
lifter
people.
And squatters.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
I need some manual labor out of some folks. There's some.
I could go for the joke, but I'm just not going.
Yeah. After I said that, I was like, "Ooh, I left that door open. Yes. I better shut it." There's a oyster restoration project going on in the harbor here. And I cannot for the life of me right now remember the name of every agency that is involved, but CCA is getting involved to help this project.
Is Sea Grant doing it, Betty?
I want to say Sea Grant is one of them, but I have not talked to Betty about it. I don't know what their input is on it. I'm sure, right. You know, not a whole lot happens around here without them. So
yeah, Betty, if it's going on, Betty usually knows or involved,
exactly.
Or running,
yeah.
It or whatever. But so what is this?
They're doing. At this stage of it is kind of a test. There's three ways to...
This is a test.
Exactly.
Okay.
There's three ways to do oyster restoration that they do. They do oyster mats, which is basically chicken wire with old oyster shells zip-tied to it. They do a bag method, which is basically a big mesh bag full of oyster shells. And then they do loose shells just dumped over the side.
That wouldn't work here.
No. But that's the three things that they do. They're trying to figure out which way is going to be the best for our habitat.
The only way it's going to work here is on the chicken wire. There's no other way it'll work.
Right.
Because if it's not up off the bottom, it's going to sink into the mud.
Exactly.
It's going to cover it with silt. It's going to get, you know, weed choked and algae choked.
So we all know how science works. They have to do these experiments.
Right.
So they're doing that, and CCA is going to help them do that. We're going to help them this Saturday. I believe it's this Saturday, the 28th.
Okay.
I got to have 20 people there to help fill bags with oysters and drill and zip tie oysters of chicken wire.
Okay, where is this?
This is going to be, oh God, I'll have to get you the address.
Is it at a place?
Yeah, it's at one of these agencies' offices.
Is it the one on Harborview?
I don't know. I could not tell you off the top of my head, Frank.
Oh, boy.
I'm foggy this morning.
Do you want me to look something up? Is it possible to look it up on the web?
Hold on. I can look it up right here on my email, probably.
Okay.
But
check
your
email. And in the meantime,
talking here.
Oysters are water filter systems. And clams, oysters, any type of shellfish like that, they filter water for a living. And oysters are a big part. Now, we are sadly lacking in oysters. And one of the things that I've noticed is we've had some of the green mussels show up, the dreaded green mussel, because, you know, they're invasive species, non-native.
Right. They do a damn good job of filtering water, though, too.
And they grow in clusters, and they're basically
right.
Just like an oyster.
Right.
This is one case that's if it comes in, it can get bad, like the zebra mussels were bad, because right. They grow on everything, and they're hard to keep from growing. But on the other hand, oysters are not doing it.
No.
They're not living.
And we kind of need all the help we can get with water filtration.
Yeah, something happened that just wiped out the oysters. Now, it could have been the same thing that happened to the flounder, the sawfish, all the rest of these. And back in 94, when we had that major flood, it just wiped them out. And it does correspond time-wise.
Right.
We had that 18 inches of rain in a couple hours, massive floods. I mean, it was, everything got ripped loose. It was unbelievable to get 18 inches of rain in an hour or so. And the roads flooded out. The dams blew apart. You could go down 41, there was bridges missing. I mean, there was, there'd be a bridge standing there, but there'd be no dirt on either side of it.
Uh-oh.
It just,
that's a problem.
Washed it right out. That's, yeah, the problem. Bridge stayed. It was fine, but there was no way to get to the bridge.
Gotcha. Okay, I do have the address here.
Okay, now, just so you know, there is an oyster. It's kind of a rehabilitation project that the CCA is getting involved in, and they do need volunteers. And you're going to be drilling holes in oysters and putting little zip strips to attach them to chicken wire.
Yep.
Or you could be over there putting them in burlap bags or bags.
I'm assuming it's a mesh bag.
It's got to be some kind of mesh bag because they
want
oysters.
Because they have to attach to the actual oyster shell. So, and I need about 20 people. And if you please contact me before you just show up down there Saturday morning.
Okay.
Because I kind of have a, got to know what's going on here.
I'm
going
to create a little page. And when you click this picture of Josh, it's going to take you to a page. It's going to have the address, the time, Josh's telephone number to get in contact with him. And all you got to do is click his little picture, and that will allow you to get a full detailed information after you're done listening to this. But where is it?
It's going to be at the DP office at Burnt Store on Burnt Store Road. 12301 Burnt Store Road is where it's going to be at. At 8:30 Saturday morning, the 28th. And like I said, it won't be an all-day thing. It'll be a couple hours of filling them up, and I think they need some help transporting them from there.
So somebody with a pickup truck is helpful?
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. I believe we're going to try to have the big CCA box truck show up and help us with that. But,
now,
I don't want to, you don't have to come and stay all day. If you come for 10 minutes and help, if you come for 30 minutes and help, that's fine,
Okay. Now, one of the questions I have is, I understand, you guys are going to put this out. Who's going to monitor it?
I'm going to assume that DEP and these other agencies that are involved with the actual project are going to be monitoring it. And okay. It'll be a, from my understanding, it'll be a year or two kind of project because, oysters don't grow fast.
Right. It could take months just to get it started.
Right. especially when they're going to deploy them, I believe, sometime in July, which is the middle of our rainy season, which is probably not the best time for oysters to be growing.
I'm kind of curious about how they do the chicken wire thing, because if it was me, I would have it on a rebar frame bent so that it comes up, a foot or two.
And keep it up off the bottom.
And so that it kind of like you'd picture a hat, mm-hmm. With a bottom base come up and across the top. To me, that would be a pretty good style.
Right. And I don't know how they do it. I guess I'll find out Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to find out.
Yeah.
But oysters, oyster beds are a big part of where fish feed.
Absolutely.
Not that they actually eat the oysters so much.
No, but it creates structure. It creates almost a reef.
It's an apartment building for every little tiny crab and minnow and everything you can think of. They live amongst the oysters. If you've got an oyster growing and another oyster growing next to it, that leaves a little space between them. And that's where they go to hide,
exactly.
Because bigger fish really can't chew off the oysters, so it creates little crevices, caves, and stuff.
Right.
And a lot of people think, well, they're there to eat the oysters. And it's true and not true. Smaller ones that they can easily break off do become food, but it's mostly the apartment complex and all the little neighbors.
Well, the way I look at it is it's basically a reef.
Right.
It's a place for bait to congregate, which if bait congregates there, big fish are going to congregate there.
Now, years ago, we used to go around and collect all the ghost crab traps. And ghost traps are crab traps that the rope has fallen off of, and then they just, we call them ghosts because they're just under the water. You don't really see them, and you don't know they're there until you hit them.
Until you hit them with your
splash with ectoplasm.
Yeah, what the heck was that?
Yeah, you got this cornucopia of metal sticking off the back of your prop. But we would collect all the ghost traps and pile them all up in one place. And they make great habitat, great reefs, and we would just cut little holes in them so the fish could get in and out of them, just rip a big hole in right. each side of it so that nothing was trapped inside. But it was that was just common. Now, we're right. not allowed to do that anymore, and so well, we and don't kind have of, those.
The way I'm looking at this project is, you know, yes, it would be completely awesome if these oysters took off and we figured out a good way to get oysters growing in our harbor again. But even if they don't, wherever we put those oysters,
going to be good
fishing.
Because
so it's a win-win if you're a fisherman right. on the harbor, you know?
And find once you find these things, I mean, if they're up off the bottom, it's going to create that relief area underneath where just bunches of
yeah.
things are going to live.
So
snook will lay underneath there, redfish, exactly. everything. I mean, if
so, it's a win-win for everybody here on the harbor, and that's why I'm trying to get people involved. You know, hey, if you use this resource, now's your time to give a little bit back.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can get a couple people to get down there and give you a hand with that. That Good. Would be really cool.
That'd be awesome.
Now, all right, getting into a little bit of fishing. You've yeah. been down in the Keys a lot. What's going on in the Keys?
I just got back last night from the Keys for 4 days. Fishing was very good and very frustrating at the same time.
Okay, what was going on?
Obviously, when I go down there, I try to go offshore pelagic fishing, you know, dolphin, wahoo, stuff like that. Stuff that we can't really do around here. And the dolphin bite was insane. But in the Atlantic, unlike the Gulf, there's a size limit on dolphin of 20 inches to the fork. I bet we caught 150 18.5, 19-inch dolphin Ooh. And a small handful of fish that were legal. It was fun, but it reminds me
of trout fishing on the east side.
Absolutely.
Middle of winter.
Absolutely.
14 and a half, yeah. 14, 14
Every cast,
and three quarter.
But exactly. But we got a nice wahoo and got a handful of dolphin to eat, and it was a good time. Weather was beautiful.
How was the snapper fishing?
I didn't even snapper fish, to tell you the truth.
Okay. What else did you do? I know you did more than that in 4 days.
I dolphin fished every day, sat around the house being lazy, watching the sunset and drinking moonshine.
Okay. Well, that explains that. So,
so life was good.
You had a really good trip. That's actually, you know, my whole thing when I go to the Keys. I try to do the Duval crawl at least once.
Right.
And if I got a hotel right there, because that's not, I don't drink after I imbibe. But yeah, that would be really cool. Go out.
Yeah, and that's what this trip was more about, just relaxing, you know, coming out of tarpon season, starting to wind down now and everything. I've been crazy busy. It was kind of some getaway me time, you know.
Oh, yeah, I'm seeing a lot of the guides coming in. They're going, you know, anybody wants a tarpon trip?
Yeah.
All that fighting out at Boca, it's spread.
It's hurt. Well, and it's hurt us.
Well, it's hurt, not hurt, whatever it did, but people are not coming here as much to tarpon fish anymore. They're going to Tampa. They're going to Belize. They go to places where people aren't fighting.
Right.
Now, keep in mind, everybody, we are not fighting up here.
Oh, no.
All we do up here is laugh at them out
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
And we have many other places to fish, and there's many other things to do besides being around there.
The tarpon fishing has been very good up here, too.
Very good lately. And along the beaches and everywhere else, there's a lot of places we fish that have nothing to do with those idiots out there fighting.
Absolutely.
And we laugh and avoid them.
Yep.
So, yeah, go ahead. Keep fighting. Send us more business.
Exactly.
So. But tarpon fishing out along the beaches, a lot of them move north. Now, I'm hearing that some of them are coming back down south again.
I've heard that. Obviously, I haven't been out there for 4 days now, but I'll be out there tomorrow. So, I'll have a little better understanding, but
Up in the harbor, we're hearing a lot of fish not showing themselves as much. But a day like today, where it's dead calm, the weird thing is you can go do triple tail today.
Yeah.
You could do triple tail. This is June. This is unheard of. But we have great triple tail fishing. There's still a bunch of cobia around and gazillion sharks.
Yeah. And there is a lot of tarpon. There is a lot of tarpon. And like you said, they're not showing. But it's kind of been their habit this year of not showing but still being there.
Right.
This year's been a great year to learn how to use your bottom machine.
Well,
As you know, I put a new bottom machine on my boat. And
yes, I'm very well aware of that. Yes, okay.
And that thing has saved my butt this year.
Yeah, you can actually find the fish.
Yeah.
But now, along the beaches, if you're going to fish along the beaches, you've got to have bait busters with you.
Yep.
You can take every other lure in the world, but make sure you got two or three colors of bait busters. Yes. Yeah, just go ahead. Thank you, Robert. Robert's doing our frozen bait order.
Somebody's got to work around here.
Yeah, somebody's got to work and support my lazy butt. But
I'm just letting you know,
I've talked about three or four guides, because you're going out tomorrow, and you've been gone 4 days. Over the last week, you throw a bait buster out, just reel it in slowly, pick a color, purple, pink.
I don't go anywhere without a bait buster during tarpon season.
And I'm telling you, it's the kiss of magic right now. I mean, throw the bait buster, slow reeling in, not a lot of jerking, jigging, not even a lot of starting and stopping. It's just kind of a slow retrieve.
Yeah.
And they're going way over what they're doing with real bait.
Good.
Dumbest looking lure ever created, and catches more fish than anything I've ever seen when it comes to tarpon.
Yeah, well, like I said, during tarpon season, I don't go anywhere. I've got a whole box of them in my boat. They don't come out of my boat during tarpon season.
And the only difference is up in the harbor, it's a lot of hard lift, slow reel down, hard lift, slow reel down, get it hopping, but you got to give it time to get back down deep again. But out along the beach, it's literally just throw it out and slow reel it in.
I've seen that on the beach where you throw it out, hold your rod tip real high, and kind of get it almost to come up to the surface.
Yep.
And they just can't stand it.
That's kind of what they're doing right now. And just letting you know, because you got to charter tomorrow after 4 days in the Keys, it's happening now. The bait buster bite is on. So it's really pretty cool. I haven't, every few years, I mean, we sell hundreds of bait busters a year because of tarpon, but right now they're flying off the wall. The guys are coming in, they're buying them by the handfuls.
So, good.
So, anyway, there's your tarpon thing, whether you're going up in the beach or on the hill or. And there seems to be a tremendous concentration of tarpon all around the inside of the hill. But you got part of them over by Jug Creek, and then you got to then just start idling towards Bull Bay.
Yeah.
And you'll run across your pot of tarpon.
People run. The outside bar at Bull Bay can be absolutely phenomenal for tarpon fishing, and no one hardly does it.
This year they are. What they're doing is everybody's seeing the boats over Jug Creek and up on the hill. You know, that north end of Pine Island over by Patricio, Mondongo area, you know, and a little closer to Boca, but, you know, kind of in line between them.
Yeah.
And then they just start idling towards Bull Bay, and they're finding their own personal pot of tarpon.
Yeah, that's kind of been the deal this year. The fish, we got a lot of fish here, but they're kind of breaking up in little pods and this and that, which is nice because for the same reason, you can go get on your own pod. You don't have to deal with everybody. You don't have to deal with the idiots. You don't have to deal with people yelling. You got your own little pod of fish, and you know, life's good.
So actually, it's been a real good season for as far as unusual tarpon fishing. And the past
this year's been the year that you take your notebook from years past and throw that joker out the dang window, because they're not doing anything. That
well, at least
done.
Set it in a drawer and use it again next year. Because next year, everything could change.
Exactly.
A lot of it has to do with they don't dredge the shipping lanes anymore. Boca Grande Pass fills in. It's going to get deeper 1 year, shallower the next. The water flow, the currents, the eddies are all changing. And those fish, just because of where the water flows and stuff, might not ever hang out in the past the way they did before, irregardless of the fishermen.
Right.
And still, nobody talks about
Frank, it. Frank, you're wrong. It has to be the fishermen.
Yeah, I know. It has to be the fishermen.
No, it has to be all these people in our past.
Right. It's.
It can't be anything else. Stop talking about it. It's not anything else. You're crazy. What's wrong with you?
Yes, I know. He's making fun because when I went to a group that's saying that this other group of fishermen is running all the fish off, and I said, well, you do know they don't dredge the pass anymore. They don't ever dredge the pass. I said, well, for almost 100 years, they dredged the shipping lane in the pass, making sure you had, you know, commercial depths. And every 4 years, it was maintenance dredged. And it hasn't been done since 2001. And every year, the water flow, the currents are changing.
And you can't have that change and not expect it to change everything.
Well, what's weird is the harbor was a lot deeper 100 years ago. And there was less silt on the bottom, and the harbor was a little different configuration 100 years ago. And when they started,
Frank remembers that he was here then.
Yeah,
he
when they started taking out the shipping lane, it in 1911 or 1910, 1911, and they started dredging. It was only 12 to 14 feet deep once you cleared the deep hole of the pass.
Right.
We're used to it being 30 plus foot deep.
Yeah.
And it was never that deep until they dredged it. So now that's filling in. It's going back to its original form.
Eventually,
you're going to go through the big 40, 60, 80 foot holes, and it's going to be 10 to 12 feet deep going out.
Right.
And that's when everything's really, really going to change.
Yeah. And I don't know if it'll change for good or bad or better.
It's just going to change.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean,
there's no way to predict, because people say, well, you know, this was what. Well, I agree in some ways with them, because for 100 years they got used to one way of everything being.
Yeah.
Never changed, always the same for 100 years, and now every year it's different.
Yeah.
1 year an island pops up on the south side of the pass, and the next year it's gone.
Right.
Then it gets real shallow. I was 3/4 mile out of the pass, made a left turn, ran aground in my flats boat.
Yeah.
I mean, it was only literally 8 inches deep.
Yeah, it's going to change.
And then all of a sudden, then it changes, and you can run a freighter through there.
Yeah.
It's just the weirdest thing.
Well, and that's the same way that if you go south of Boca Grande, all the, you know, Redfish, Captiva, Blind Pass, you know, those passes change every year, too.
But Boca's going to look more like Captiva Pass in a couple years.
Yeah, I have a feeling.
You'll go out, and you'll have to turn south because it's going to hump up on one side.
Right.
The water still has to get out and come in.
Yeah, that channel that where the buoys are not going, it's not probably not going to be the channel forever.
No, it's. I would say within the next 10 years, you're going to start to see a southerly curve to the
right.
Where those markers are no longer valid for as far as where the deep water is.
Right. What's funny
but if those markers go out, they're not going to replace them. All the Coast Guard will do is take them out.
Right. What's funny is, you want to see things change, go look at, like, Captiva Pass on Google Earth.
Yeah.
And you can go in Google Earth and archive back
right.
For years and years and years and watch that channel. You know, as you click on a year, it all changes north, south, east, west. You know, it all changes every year. Yeah.
And the only reason that's really important, guys, is because everybody's talking about how fish move and fish are here this year and they weren't here and this is what they always did. Well, when you have 100 years of man-made maintenance,
they got dependent on us.
Well, forget dependent, not dependent, right. But things don't change when people are involved. When
right.
When man says I'm going to make this stay this way,
yeah.
It stays that way. We invent big machinery, we maintain it, and it stays pretty much the way it is. Well, the fish, for 100 years, always did the same thing because man always did the same thing.
Right.
Now that man is not doing the same thing, the fish are not doing the same thing.
Right.
It's as simple as that. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to say once people get uninvolved and allow nature to change it. Because the one thing about nature is every time you look at it, it changes something.
Absolutely. It's constantly changing.
Anyway, getting back to it, one question I always ask people is, our captains and everybody, is if you were going to go out tomorrow and just have fun, any idea where you would send somebody and what would they catch?
If I was going to go out tomorrow and just have fun, I'd probably start out in the morning up here in the Upper Harbor looking for tarpon. Hey, that's my phone. Oh, Greg Whaley, he can wait.
Okay.
I would start out here up here in the holes looking for tarpon, and if they didn't show themselves, I'd probably try to fish them on the bottom, maybe throw some bait busters. And then from there, I would start drifting the holes, catching these little sharks. There's a lot of little sharks in the harbor right now.
Now, we were talking a little while ago about trolling for tarpon.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about trolling through those holes with the bait busters?
You could probably do it. Never tried it. I would probably suggest not using your outboard, using your trolling motor, or using the wind or whatever you've got.
I think you could get away with your outboard. I'd put another 50 feet of line out.
Yeah, if you're going to use your outboard, you're going to need to go further back. But
because
I think you could definitely do it.
As long as you're idling, not changing the tempo of the motor,
Usually
it doesn't mess the fish up that
much. Yeah, and those fish out there are used to being outboards running. I mean, they're in the middle of the harbor.
But the big thing is, if you change the sound of the motor, you change the tempo of the motor, you're going to screw up your fishing.
Even with a trolling motor, people forget about that. If you're up and down on a trolling motor all the time, you're spooking fish.
So if you're going to use your outboard, try trolling. I would try a bait buster on one side. What do you think the other one would be?
I would probably put that broke back X-Trap, that bigger plug they have. I can't remember what number it is. It looks like a thread that fin.
Balsa Extreme?
No, the actual X-Trap one. It's
Oh, you're talking about the Shad Wrap.
Yeah, maybe it is. It looks like, yeah, it's like a shad shaped bait, right. But it's bigger. It's got a broke. It's got a kind of broke back right. to it.
So the Rapala on one side, a bait buster on the other, and I would not put more than a couple lines out. And
yeah, no,
slow
no.
troll. I'm going to guess about 3.5 miles
say,
an hour.
Yeah, 3.5 miles an hour.
Three
slow.
To 3.5 miles an hour. Not going real quick. Maybe put a little drop of Pro Cure on them just
yeah.
to.
Probably wouldn't hurt anything.
Half a drop of Pro Cure, and I'm literally mean a half a drop, folks. I'm not talking about a squirt.
I mean,
put a half a drop on your finger, rub it on the bait, rub it over your knot, your leader.
Right.
And because trolling slow at 3 miles an hour or whatever, the fish are going to see it, but they're going to come from behind it. They can actually come up to grab it.
Yeah, it's going to be a natural, it's going to be a instinctive strike, I think, more than it is going to be a smelling it and really studying it, you know.
But I'm always concerned about the human smell on it.
Absolutely.
We stink. Yes. Yeah, so if I was going to do it, I'd put a half a drop of Pro Cure on it. Even shoot it with WD-40, Anisole.
Yeah, just something to get your scent off of.
Just get your scent off of it, whatever brand of scent you like, whether right. it's for bass or whatever. Just
yeah,
put something on it. Yeah.
Something other than human stink.
So I think that would be a real good idea to just see how that goes. It relieve a lot of pressure on your arm because you're going to be casting 50, 60, 80 times.
Yep.
Might be easier just to keep them in the water
right.
and just idle around a big circle.
A big mile. Right.
2 mile circle.
Right. And then if that didn't work, I think I would put some small cut bait out or some live bait if you had it and catch some of these little sharks. There's a ton of little sharks in the harbor.
Oh, yeah.
And they're a blast on light tackle. I mean, don't go out there.
There is some monster catfish out there. I'd be using 6 to 12 pound, 8 to 17
yeah, don't
pound.
Don't go out there with your pin senator and your 80 pound test. Go out there with your redfish rod, you know, and have some fun with these little sharks. And always have a rod ready right now for cobia because there's still cobia in the harbor. So
there's
you never know when they're going to show up.
So anyway, I would suggest kind of a path between the 20 foot hole and the middle hole.
Yeah.
Kind of go from one to the other, just make a big loop.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would probably be my best guess for a great. And the tarpon lures are going to hit cobia. You might even get a shark
Sharks.
On them.
Yeah,
I mean, anything's
no
going to hit them.
Get on them.
Especially that bait buster. I mean, just about everything's whacking that.
Oh, a cobia will eat a bait buster in a heartbeat.
So, anyway, anything else we got left to talk about here, Josh?
No, I think I'm good, Frank. Thank
All
you.
Right, to sum it up, click Josh's picture. And I'm building a page right now, and it will be up when this is up with all the information about where to go and what to do to volunteer to help rebuild the oyster beds in Charlotte Harbor. And that's coming up this Saturday because today is the 24th. So in 4 days, this Saturday, the 28th of June, they're going to be needing volunteers down on Burnstall Road. I'll have the address and everything up. Click Josh's picture. It'll take you right to it. And I guess time for, let's see.
Hey.
Ah. I don't know why, but the music relaxes me. Calms me down. Makes me understand the world's a good place. Even if it's me playing the guitar, it still works.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that would work even more for me because I picked the music, so.
Exactly.
But anyway, Fishing Frank here. This is Radio Fishing. It's Captain Josh Greer. Click his picture, and it will take you to all the information about the volunteers needed on Burnstall Road this Saturday, 8:30
in
the morning.
Yep.
Okay. We'll see you on the next Radio Fishing. Thank you, guys.